Welcome to the South African Property Industry Update. All participants will be in listen-only mode. There will be an opportunity to ask questions later during the conference. If you should need assistance during the call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero. Please note that this call is being recorded. I would now like to hand the conference over to Estienne de Klerk. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Irene. Good afternoon, everybody, and thanks for making the time. I think Irene indicated that we've got a mere 450 and growing interested in parties and investors on the call. Must be evident of the quietness of sitting at home or the absolute chaos on the markets. So I'd just like to welcome everybody. And today we have quite a unique call in that we're speaking on behalf of the real estate industry. With me, I've got Neil Gopal, who's CEO of SAPOA, which is the South African Properties Owners Association. I've also got Amanda Stops, who's CEO of the South African Council of Shopping Centres. I've also got Lawrence Rapp, who is one of the CEO of Vukile, and he is one of the chairmen of one of the subcommittees that we will be talking about today. The purpose of the call today is not to discuss anything company specific, and to give you a bit of an idea of what is actually going on in the background. As the markets clearly are incredibly volatile, we believed it important to inform you of all the activities that we are busy working on in the background that is really relevant to not only the listed property sector, but also some of our clients and potentially, you know, it also impacts clearly the unlisted real estate sector as well. So a little bit of a background, you know, one of the reasons why we are putting this call together is because there's no doubt that this isn't just a perfect storm, it's a perfect hurricane. I think we have unprecedented environment that we have to operate in. And because of that, many of our executive teams for the REITs are with their heads in the scrum, so to speak, and they actively working to mitigate risks, to manage the challenges that arise from the specific situation. And we believed it made sense rather to try and aggregate the information flow to media and to investors specifically, and then to try and alleviate some of the pressure on some of these management teams as it relates to questions coming to them from different investors. So you can imagine if you're trying to run your business and you've got 300 guys trying to call you and ask you questions about X, Y, and Z. So the idea is really for us to try and help these guys in this process, and also to provide you with an undertaking that from the industry point of view, and from the different REITs, as and when we have specific information to disseminate, we will clearly communicate with the market as best possible. So a little bit of background just around the specific industry initiatives and how the groups have come together. So about a week ago, and I must admit, it's hard to believe that we only started a week ago because it feels like nearly like a year of work that's been done in the past week. We have coordinated the SA REIT Association, of which I'm the chair, SAPOA, and SA Corporate, SA Shopping Center Council. So these are the big representative bodies for the real estate players in the South African market. And what we believed we needed to do as an industry was to try and get a collective. So if you're dealing with the banks, then you deal with BASA. Okay, there's only six banks that really make up, it's probably a little bit more, but six material big banks. So It's a very concentrated body, if you'd like. In real estate, we're dealing with multiple landlords, owners, investors, developers. So quite proliferated, the industry, and it's a wide church. And what we've tried to do is trying to aggregate all these different interest groups and try to coordinate the sort of initiatives that are coming out of the group and trying to deal as a collective with all the little challenges that that we have as the group. So in this initiative, we're calling it the Property Industry Group, and this grouping then collectively speaks for real estate in South Africa and represents all the large owners and companies that that you are either invested in or you know that are REITs and listed on the market, as well as other private investors, etc., as earlier mentioned. The clear overview for the past week is that, you know, from a REIT perspective, I mean, just in the past 2-3 weeks, the market's been under extreme pressure. And I saw some statistic to say that, you know, year to date, the REITs have lost roughly about 50% of their market capitalization as a average across the sector. Some a little bit more, some a little bit less, but that clearly isn't a great statistic if you're an investor in the sector. And on top of that, there's a lot of uncertainty and a lot of concern from investors as it relates to specifically the COVID virus impact on our industry. And along with that, to clearly make it more complicated, what we are seeing is clearly some of the REITs have suspended their interim dividends. Some of them haven't been able to pay dividends for some time now, where they haven't met solvency criteria. And I think many of you are concerned around, you know, how the REIT model sort of functions in this environment and the REIT status of some of these companies. So given all this uncertainty, what we have done in the property group, the property industry group, is we have identified a couple of key initiatives. And we're going to cover each one of these key initiatives with you and to give you a bit of a background. So these will be talked through by my co-speakers here today. And hopefully by the end of the call, you'll have a good idea of what areas the industry are specifically focusing on and what we are doing in each box. So the first box that the first little, let's say, area that we needed to work on was the Competition Commission. Neil's going to speak through that. We're then going to cover the banking and other funders liaison, which Lawrence Rapp is the chair of that committee, and he's working on that interaction. And then we've got the tenant and operations, if you'd like to broadly call it that, interactions. Neil can touch on that, and we'll chip in along the way. And then we'd also like to give Amanda Stops the opportunity just to explain the role that the shopping center council can play in these discussions with their unique positioning and their unique member base. We also have some REIT-specific areas that we need to cover in terms of the tax and regulatory environment. And we hope to be able to give you a bit of background as to some of those initiatives. Then we've also got some other potential initiatives that are happening in the background, which early days, but we can just give you a bit of a background on that. There'll just be a general summary, and then I think if there's some time left, hopefully we'll be able to cover one or two questions in the end. I don't think we'll unfortunately have a huge amount of time for questions. We might take 5 or 6 questions right at the end. So I'd like to give over to Neil just to give us a bit of a overview, Neil, just of the whole Competition Commission issue and how that's relevant.
Thanks, Estienne. So Estienne, I think we had a conversation last week, Monday, or even I think a few days before that, probably over the weekend, as to whether the landlords can actually get together and between themselves, have a conversation as a collective to discuss a number of things. The challenge and I think the concern from the industry was, would the landlords be transgressing the Competitions Act? And we needed clarity on that from the Competitions Commissioner. So on the 24th of March, I drafted a letter to Minister Patel, Minister Patel's office. And the question begs, of course, why was it at, to his office? But obviously the regulations were released or being drafted in his office. That letter then was handed by the minister over to the Competitions Commissioner, 24th of March, and we had given them a outline and an overview of what we wanted to discuss. The, there were 10 points to that agenda. I can quickly just mention that. Number one was community and shopper safety and hygiene. Number two was logistics, obviously around important issues like food delivery and supply chain management for essential services like supermarkets and grocery stores, pharmacies. And number three was broader security, maintenance, and other measures to be implemented at the malls. Point four on the agenda was SMME assistance. What is the industry approach to helping small tenants to ensure minimal or no job losses during the business closure? So, of course, we very concerned about job losses and job preservation should be an easy top of our agenda. Number five was management of operational expenses and utility management. Of course, this is a important aspect. Even whilst the shopping centre may be half empty, the landlord is still liable for payments of utilities to the local authority. Number six on our agenda was trading hours and coordination of hygiene sterilisation initiatives in accordance to not only the regulations, but also a week prior to that, SAPO was notice to all the members of how to go about implementing measures. Number seven was tenant and centre management. Obviously, this revolved around the coordination of the efforts to ensure smooth operation during the lockdown period. Number eight was customer management. How do we deal with volume and processes? Number nine dealt with payment terms. Of course, it deals with the rental issue, utility payments. And then 10 was possibility of classification of tenants for the purposes of the gazetting. Now, of course, this is important because we felt that the gazetted regulations, the initial set of regulations, were not that clear in terms of stratifying different types of tenants and different types of retailers. So the agenda found its way with a letter to the Competitions Commissioner. A day later, they reverted back to us. They're quite happy with the agenda. They just needed clarification on three more points, just to ensure that we are not transgressing the Competitions Act. We then received word, I think it was around Friday last week, that they are quite comfortable with our agenda, and as a body representing the landlords, we are free to have a meeting with the landlords based on that 10-point agenda. So that meeting took place this morning at 10 o'clock, a fairly lengthy 3-hour meeting. So essentially, I think, Estienne, from my side, those were the competitions-related issues.
Okay. Thanks, thanks, Neil. So maybe just moving on, obviously funding into the sector is a key area of focus. Balance sheet strength and liquidity in these times is an absolute essential component of the management focus of every REIT. And in this environment, clearly liquidity gets tested for many organizations. So what we believed it absolutely essential to do was to try and manage some of that pressure with the funding providers. And I think, Lawrence, if you can maybe take us through some of that those initiatives.
Right, thanks, Estienne, and good afternoon to everybody. Hope all of you are well and all your families are well. So just to give you a bit of background with a context that both Estian and Niela provided, we put a working group together to represent that. So the people leading the discussions are myself, Leon Koch from Redefine, Melissa Kokana from Pareto and Rajanana from Attack. We had a meeting late last week with representatives of the Big Five banks to discuss the engagement and key issues that we felt needed to be put on the table. I'm going to get to what those key issues are. Unfortunately, however, before we get there, there was a concern from the banking industry that whilst they had a dispensation from the minister to, from the Competition Act requirements to be able to talk amongst themselves around industry solutions, they weren't sure if the current dispensation that they had allowed them to have industry-to-industry discussions, i.e. banking to the property industry. So we agreed to sort of go and defer and get further legal advice on that. The status of that is from the property, the real estate environment. As Neil's just put on the table, we can confirm that we have that dispensation to talk to the banking and the funding industry collectively as a body. And the banks are, in fact, busy with those discussions at the moment, but it looks as though they are going to be able to talk to us as a collective. Certainly in discussions with Mike Brown from Barca, he was of the opinion that that they would be able to do so, but each bank felt they wanted to just get their own legal opinion. So we're hoping that that will be sort of squared off in the next 24 hours or so, and that will then allow for discussions between a property sector grouping and a banking grouping to try and decide how to move forward. That being said, there's been a number of individual discussions that I've had with the very senior people in all the various banks. And I must say that there is a very strong willingness, positive and proactive approach from all the banks to try and find solutions. As we, I think the banking industry realizes that this is an issue of national importance. It's a humanitarian crisis. It's about coming together to find solutions to keep the economy going. And I think there's a tremendous pragmatism. So really, without committing any of the banks, I can say that I've been very, very encouraged with the approach that all the banks have put on the table. And it's really just caution at the moment, making sure that they can get over that ComCom-related hurdle before we can actually sit down and get into the meat of the issues. As a result, though, of the discussions that we've had already, one thing that's becoming increasingly clear is that the funding issue in the property sector cannot be handled with the banks alone. One has to bring in the bondholders as well. So to that extent, I spoke to Ian Kirk, who's the Deputy Chairman of ASISA. We spoke yesterday, and he's now put me in contact with Leon Kampfer. So when this call is done, we'll be looking to engage with ASISA as a way of being able to engage with the bondholders as well. And that is really because what the banks are going to be looking for, and one can understand their view, is that they don't end up ranking behind the bondholders in terms of any solutions that we may come to. And equally, a lot of the issues that we need to be dealing with apply to both banks and bondholders. So broadly speaking, these are the types of issues that we are looking to put on the table for discussion. One is to try and get an approach to covenants. How are banks going to be viewing covenants, LTV, ICR, minimum NAV kind of covenants, all of which are likely to come under pressure in the industry. And here I'm not talking only about REITs. I'm talking more broadly the property industry. How will the banks be approaching them, especially given two issues? One, the inability of many of our tenants to pay rent. And the second, and probably the more perplexing one, is how are banks and bondholders going to treat property valuations over the next reporting period when there is such material uncertainty in the valuation environment, and probably all valuations are going to be caveated with some wording that seems to be coming out of the international valuation societies on really, placing caution on values, given that the outlook is so uncertain and that all values really are forward 12-month looking scenarios, very difficult to work those out. So in short, your valuations are going to be qualified more than likely in the industry. That will then have resultant impact on covenants. And a key question we have to deal, what will the bank and the bondholders use be with regards to the covenants? Second issue is going to be views on servicing interest. A third is going to be on maturing facilities and refinancing. How are banks going to handle that? Is it possible to try and get an automatic extension of facilities? So on. And what would the length of any potential support be? Now, I think where we are going to end up in these discussions is probably trying to agree some level of base understanding on these issues across the industry. But what the banks are also stressing is that they are very keen to progress these discussions on a bilateral basis between borrower and lender. And whereas you've seen a number of initiatives around SMEs, around individuals from the banks, what's coming out clearly in the discussions is because of the large volume of customers in both of those spheres, you do need a broad one-size-fits-all strategy. But given the real sort of, you know, varied nature of funding agreements, types of companies, covenants that exist between in the property industry, the feeling and also the lower number of transactions, the feeling from the banks is to say they are all keen to engage directly one-on-one with their bankers. And I'm sure all of my colleagues in the industry will tell you sort of they've been, you know, very significant interactions with all of our bankers at this time. But I think everybody is getting that same sort of level of pragmatic support from the bankers. So that's broadly how we are going to be going forward. What are the minimum conditions that you can agree collectively? And then how does each party take it forward individually? And then finally, is there any sort of support for smaller commercial landlords through this process, you know, as we sort of see how this all unfolds. So broadly, those are sort of the agenda points that we're looking to discuss. We're expecting to get the banking go-ahead in the next 24 to 48 hours, and the discussions with the CISA will begin shortly to try and bring them in, and then to see whether we can actually bring the three parties together to try and find one common set of understandings as to how to deal with the impacts of COVID from a funding and liquidity point of view going forward. Estienne, thanks very much.
Thanks, Lauren. I think that was incredibly comprehensive, Lawrence. Obviously, for us, very important, because I think if you have challenges in the real estate space, you know, it could start spilling over in terms of a systemic risk onto the financial services sector, and obviously we're trying to prevent that. So the next topic I'd like to cover is Neil. I don't know if you can maybe just take us through, I know you touched on some of those points in your previous Comcom note, but just on the tenant initiatives and operation initiatives, and, you know, clearly here from an industry perspective, I can't emphasize enough the level of understanding and sympathy that we as the property industry have for the small tenants, and also at the same time also for the smaller landlords, because in this environment it's obviously an environment that's imposed on the industry to some extent from external factors, and you know, given the environment, what we as an industry have got an acute understanding of is, you know, how the bigger picture all fits together and how our contribution as the industry has an impact on literally the smaller operators and the smaller business and the employment in this country. So from our point of view, it's quite important that we, you know, have a specific committee looking at this area and where we can provide tenant assistance and relief in terms of the whole process. So Neil, I don't know if you've got anything that you want to cover there specifically.
Just a quick overview, nothing in detail. A few principal issues that we covered. Thanks, Estienne. So just to recap, about 8-9 days ago, when just prior to the government mentioning the lockdown, we immediately got hold of our line minister, Minister Patricia DeLille, and which was on a Saturday morning. And we were advised that the president is convening a meeting with the cabinet ministers and business on Sunday afternoon. So we did put down, if you recall, a list of essential businesses prior to the regulations being received. The president did receive our letter at 2 p.m. that afternoon on Sunday. And then Monday evening, when he gave his televised address around the lockdown, he made mention of some of the items that we had listed as far as essential services are concerned, in particular reference to the malls. And so, yeah, we just want to, you know, we're thankful for having that direct line. We've worked very closely with the Business Unity South Africa, BUSA, the Banking Association of South Africa, in putting all these measures in place that when the regulations do come out, that the property industry is not falling through the cracks. Albeit that the regulations are not that specific in terms of stratifying different types of retailers, for argument's sake. But I think we must realize that the regulations are open enough to change on a regular basis when it comes to things like definitions. Obviously, we don't want them to be changing on a day-to-day basis, as it just causes more confusion. But other than that, you know, we've received a number of legal opinions on the regulations, the definitions, just to give the industry a lot more guidance and clarity because of the number of the calls that were coming into our offices with respect to the regulations and some of the definitions or ambiguity that came across. Then lastly, of course, we established a task team. Well, we've got two task teams, one that's dealing with the regulatory and banking issues that's chaired by Estienne with Lawrence assisting on that front. And then we've got the tenant matters task team number one that is being chaired by myself with a number of landlords that participate on that task team. I think that's it from my side, Estienne.
Thanks, Neil. I appreciate that. So I'm going to move on to Amanda. Amanda, can you just give us a little bit of an overview of how you think, you know, that Shopping Centre Council is going to play a helpful role here?
Perfect. So good afternoon, everyone. I think as mentioned previously, South African Council of Shopping Centres has a unique situation in that the members include both that of retailers and shopping centres or shopping centre owners. And our message and our appeal to all our stakeholders and our various communications has been that the role that we see for our organization is really to encourage communication and to find ways of how we can work together to find joint solutions. We really need to do this in order to ensure the success and survival of our industry. It really isn't in anyone's interest for us to see even retailers closing doors, or for shopping centres to go out of business, and therefore that coming to the party and joint communication is absolutely essential in terms of solution seeking. So we've been involved in the various groups, as both Neil and Estienne has mentioned, as a property industry as a whole, whilst we seek these solutions, which, as I'm sure everyone can understand, will take a little bit of time. However, I am also encouraged to see how people are understanding, and despite all the emotions that are understandable as well, people are really willing to look for solutions. And as I said, we need to encourage this even more. We've also been involved from an operational perspective with various other bodies, such as the Consumer Goods Council, especially in dealing with the various supermarkets, as to how they are going to continue to operate, how a lot of them are involved together with themselves, the banking industry, as well as the post office and post bank, et cetera, in terms of delivering SATA grants. And that has been a big priority over the last 3 days, as to how we deal with factors such as social distancing and how we deal with security, et cetera. Not an easy challenge, but a challenge as such that we've had to deal with and try and provide information and communication to our shopping centre owners as to how they can work with the supermarket retailers to try and ensure the safety of the customer. And then more recently, communications with the Restaurants Association, and again, trying to just find solutions where all of us can work together to really ensure the success or the survival of the industry as a whole. I think that probably summarizes our main message, Essien. Are you there?
Covering is then the, obviously on the tax and regulatory side, the industry's model in itself presents certain challenges for the REITs. And what are we talking about specifically? Is in an environment where share prices are down 50-60%, that REITs are trading at material discounts to stated NAV. Even if they wanted to raise capital, I think in this environment, you folks out there will probably know better than most. I think with the amount of outflows, many of the asset managers have seen in their, out of their general equity and out of their real estate specific mandated funds. I think raising capital in this market is going to be a little bit of an uphill exercise. Many of the REITs with valuations starting to come under pressure, and certainly with uncertainty around valuations just in this environment, I think access to huge quantities of debt for liquidity is also questionable. So from a REIT perspective, I think the only other lever that we can really pull is either selling assets and retaining distributions. So if we look at the selling assets part, liquidity in this market has pretty much dried up to a large extent. Banks are incredibly careful in providing debt to investors in the space. On top of that, there aren't that many investors that, private or otherwise, have a huge equity position that they can write a check on the back of, and as a result, it's very difficult to get transactions done. And at the same time, often the pricing expectation gap between that of the REIT and where the market is prepared to price in these uncertain times is too wide to ensure successful transactions to be concluded. So the only other lever is, of course, withholding distributions, which is quite a topical issue, because I know there's one or two of the larger REITs that have indicated they actually withheld their interim distributions. Now, I know there's a few capital, articles out in the market crying foul and indicating that these guys automatically lose their REIT status. Now, I can guarantee you that isn't the case. The rule is that REITs measured over a year have to pay out 75% of their distributable earnings, and they obviously have to meet certain regulatory requirements. So as long as by the end of the period, the REIT has met the 75% threshold, as the Act reads at the moment, then it, the REIT won't lose its REIT status. There's also a caveat in the Act which speaks to the Companies Act, where it refers to the solvency test for every company paying out a dividend. It has to prove solvency and liquidity and assess it. The directors have to assess it prior to the payment of that distribution, and they have to come to terms that the REIT is able to pay that distribution and also will be in a liquid position and a solvent position post the payment of that distribution, where its assets exceed its liabilities. So there are cases where that has been a challenge. Now, in terms of the big picture, what the industry has been working on is clearly in this environment, you know, it would be ideal if maybe from the regulatory aspect and from national treasury's perspective, for the tax legislation, that we can negotiate maybe a reprieve or relief for maybe a two-year period, so this year and next year, in terms of which it will enable REITs to withhold their distribution. So at this stage, as I mentioned, they have to pay out 75% of their distributable earnings, and they also have to maintain their LTV below 60%. A further requirement which comes into the mix is also the 75% rental income requirement. So in other words, in an environment where your rentals drop and certain REITs have a very, very large cross-currency swap position, the way the accountants are accounting at this stage for cross-currency swaps, they separate the instrument out. So that on the one hand, you've got a deposit earning interest, and on the other hand, you've got a loan having interest charged to the REIT. So they separate those. So all of a sudden, you have a big earnings in interest, and that's causing certain stresses and strains on certain of the REITs that do have foreign exposure. So in working through our SA REIT Tax and Regulatory Committee, headed up by Gerald Falkel, they are actively working with National Treasury. I've actually seen the correspondence backwards and forwards between the JSE and the National Treasury on amending or providing potentially some relief in this regard as it relates to the specific situation that we have at the moment. So that is a quite a big work stream, and you can imagine how technical it is with dealing with tax and regulatory issues. And as such, we've got a team of advisors assisting the industry in the dealings on the specific nitty-gritty as it relates to all the different clauses in the Tax Act, how they talk to each other. And then if we had to suspend these dividends, clearly the one big matter that needs to be resolved is it's all good and well retaining the income, but every single REIT is a taxpayer. And at this point, the idea would be not to merely pay tax on the retained income, but to have a dispensation for 2 years, which provides the REITs with tax relief on these retained on the retained income, if you'd like. So this is a work stream that's been driven from that Tax and Regulatory Committee, and we hope to get some feedback over the next couple of months as it relates to specifically these distributions being withheld and tweaking all the regulations to make sure that what we're trying to achieve is achieved. Now, obviously, to the extent that REITs withhold their distributions, clearly investors are going to be a little bit double-minded, so to speak. On the negative side, I mean, I think most REIT investors are looking for the distribution, the growing income distribution. Some investors even rely on that distribution to live off. But the positive for the industry in retaining only for a limited period is, one, it's a limited period, and two, it will be a very efficient way of strengthening the balance sheets of these companies to ensure a sustainable and a more prosperous sector going forward. So maybe in that, I think, takes care of the tax and regulatory stream. So those are the main big work streams. There are other potential initiatives which goes a little bit broader than the REIT sector and the property sector. And we are looking to maybe see if we can potentially be involved in some of these industry initiatives. They would include potentially some kind of a link with the Solidarity Fund, which Adrian Eindhoven and Mr. Rupert and Motsepe and Oppenheimer are involved in. So let's call it a SME assistance fund. There's also other stimulus initiatives that that we know that some of the financial institutions are busy working on, and potentially the real estate industry could play a role in those initiatives going forward. So there's quite a lot of things afoot, and I'm sure that that hopefully over the next coming weeks, you know, this story will develop. So maybe just in summary, and in the interest of time, big picture, I think that, you know, clearly the REIT sector has suffered a lot of pressure in the markets. Hopefully there will be some investor support starting to come through at these levels. I think from a certainty point of view, as it relates to the impact of the virus and the impact on our tenants, that remains a little bit fluid, to be honest. And what we can guarantee you is that we actively working with our tenants. I know there's a lot of media around some of the big tenants sending letters of what they will and won't do. The reality is we will be liaising with all these large tenants and with the little ones to make sure that that the industry remains sustainable. Clearly, the uncertainty remains around how long this lockdown potentially could last. At this stage, it's set for 21 days to the 14th of April. But, you know, we've seen from the international sort of perspective that these things remain fluid. Another factor that's come into vogue is also obviously the downgrade of SA South Africa's credit rating. Now, that impacts quite a few of the REITs that will be downgraded in accordance or have been downgraded in accordance with sovereign. And I think that, you know, generally most of the investors believe that that's been priced into the market. And the big issue is through Lawrence's initiative with the banking and the funders, as well as through initiatives from the industry at large, we want to ensure that liquidity in the banking and financial sector remains open. And in terms of the impact of the downgrade, only time will really tell as to what that really, how that will play out. I do see that the Rand has weakened quite a bit this morning, and I'm not sure if that is the bond traders switching out of South African bonds or what is driving that, but certainly that is an impact. I think, as I want to reiterate, clearly there is a big focus on protecting the smaller investment companies, property investment companies, and also protecting the smaller tenants. So a lot of the initiatives that the industry is working on will be focusing on that. So I think that more or less is what we have on the menu for today in terms of the industry. I don't know if there are people that have questions or if there's ability. Irene, can people ask questions? Can they mail anybody with a question if they've got any?
Estienne, it's Lawrence. Before we move on to questions, do you mind if I just make a comment, please?
Sure. Go for it, Lawrence.
Great, thank you. I think just to take this opportunity, you know, as Estienne mentioned up front, the workload at the moment is extreme with all of us trying to run our own businesses. But from an SRE point of view, we all do this on a voluntary basis, and I think no more so than Estienne. So I'd actually just like to sort of thank Estienne on behalf of the sector for the unbelievable time and effort he's putting in at the moment to coordinate all of these efforts. I think what is inherent in all of our thinking at the moment is that we're working for the good of South Africa. I think we all have to put our own company interests, I think, to the side for the moment. That's property, retailers, banks, and we've got to work collectively around that overall value chain. And that certainly is a mindset that is coming through from all the players involved in the various work groups, But again, just a thank you on behalf of the industry for all the tremendous effort you're putting in at the moment.
Yeah, thanks, Lawrence. And I mean, obviously, there's a whole a bunch of folks like Lawrence and other people that are also equally got their heads in the scrum, busy pushing industry issues while running their own businesses. And I think without them, you know, it's impossible to move forward. I mean, we're also going to be talking to our clients, and I think without them and their cooperation, and then obviously sharing our view of the big picture, I think many of these challenges will increasingly be difficult to resolve. But we're quite confident that we can find each other for the good of not only the real estate industry, but obviously the South African economy and all the jobs and people that are in the sectors that we touch on. So, you know, I think these are absolutely essential initiatives in this time. So I'm not sure, it doesn't look like we have any specific questions. I don't know if Irene from Chorus Call is available. I just wanted to check. Is it possible for people to ask questions, or how would they go about doing that if they wanted to?
So if participants would like to ask a question, you're welcome to press star and then one on your touchtone phone. If you, however, wish to withdraw the question, you may press star and then two to remove yourself from the question queue. If anyone would like to ask a question, please press star and then one.
Okay.
I don't know if you have an email address that you would like to suggest people to send questions
okay.
to.
They're welcome to email me at edeklerk, which is edeklerk, at growthpoint.co.za. That's another alternative, but otherwise the star one certainly sounds like quite an efficient, quick way to get the questions through. I think we'll take three or four or five questions, depending on time. So I'm not sure if there's anybody that's got any questions.
We have a question from Lisa Brunton of Nedbank CIB.
Thank you.
Hi, not a question, just to say thank you to Estienne for this, for coordinating this phenomenal endeavor.
Thanks, Lisa. It is a tad ambitious, but hopefully we get the results. Ultimately, it's all about the results in this game.
I believe we will.
Thank you very much. And yeah, thanks for the bank's support. I think it's important that, you know, we're all in this boat together. So we've got to paddle it in the right direction, and you guys play a great role in that part. Thank you very much. Any other questions?
We have a question from Yanni Yang of Mentanova.
Thank you.
Hi. Good afternoon, everyone. I think for all your effort in trying to keep this industry sustainable in such a volatile and difficult period. I just want to have a good, like maybe have a more of a better understanding in terms of, I think, basically downgrade, I think it is mainly the current level of the SACI, how much of the market, how much has been priced in terms of the impact of COVID-19? The SA economy and the property market. Do you think that has already been priced in at the current valuation? And also in terms of property valuations, do you think if any exceptions can be applied here in terms of adjusting, pause the adjustment to the property valuations for all the REIT companies? And then also, are you guys speaking to the government regarding maybe in terms of a relaxation of e-commerce and online shopping for consumers, such that maybe a part of the retail sector can still function in the current economic environment?
Okay, so there's quite a few questions there. I'll try and deal with them, and if I miss one, Yanni, you must just highlight to me. So I think the first question relates to the valuations and the impact of the downgrade and COVID. And I think there's two levels of valuation. One is on property, and one is at the investment level, so on the shares of the REITs. And I think Lawrence, maybe if you want to chip in, you're welcome to, but if it comes to the valuations of the REITs, it looks like the market's priced in the COVID and the downgrade 250%. Looking at our deep the discounts are to NAV. In saying that, I mean, there is still a level of uncertainty, and you know, clearly, we're just running these companies. It's quite difficult for us to really give you a certainty on valuation of these stocks underlying, because I think, you know, it really is a company by company kind of thing. Certainly, my view would be that the pricing, and I can only speak for Growthpoint in this specific case, I mean, the pricing of Growthpoint's share is back to 2005, 2006. And there is probably some truth that in this environment, the distributions aren't at the current levels, probably will, you know, it's realistic to expect that there's a reason why Growthpoint has pulled its guidance. And that is because there's a level of uncertainty with regards to those kind of things. So that will play out in the future. And but, you know, I think every company will communicate very clearly. As at a property level, I think Lawrence was quite articulate in pointing out that, you know, in this environment where there isn't liquidity and where there isn't really a huge amount of trade happening specifically in the big ticket items, it's quite difficult to really, in a small economy like ours, really with certainty determine the valuations. And as such, I think what you will find is that most of the boards will get the independence to perform the valuations as best possible with the best information that they have at the in their position. And, you know, certainly from a valuation point of view, will give you a view of what they think the values are in this market. And I think that's the best that most managements can do. Lawrence, I don't know if you want to add to just to that, if there's any a different angle, and then we can cover some of the other thoughts.
Yes, Jen, I would just add a couple of brief points on valuation. You know, sort of not repeating what I said earlier, but clearly with the uncertainty going forward, you know, the question is what's that going to do to valuations? Now, I'm not going to get into specifics. All I would do is encourage people to say when you're thinking about a valuation, most companies, most valuers are going to value on a just kind of cash flow methodology. Over a 5 or 10 year period. Now, when you take the impact of COVID, and it's absolutely extreme for every one of us, and we're sitting and living through it at the moment. But if you take a big step back from where we are and say, well, look, hopefully in 3 months' time, we're through that environment. When you start actually taking the impact of a 3 month impact on cash flows and maybe then a build up as things get back to normal, and you then run your DCF, you might find, and in fact, when I say might, we've actually done it, your impacts are not as severe as you might think they are. And I would encourage people to look at that, remembering once you're running a DCF, the majority of your value sits in your terminal value. Now, if your terminal value is being forecast in 5 and 10 years out, and your cash flow impact is happening over, call it a 12-month period, you are going to have an impact on your valuations, but it's probably a lot less than intuition would tell you it's going to be. And I would encourage people to run some of those scenarios and sensitivities themselves to get a feel for what might happen. But I think the key point is this: nobody knows what the future is going to hold. We have no idea which tenants will survive, which tenants will sort of bounce back very quickly, which are going to sort of, you know, take sort of a longer term to recover. And I think only once we through it and we get back into that environment will greater certainty come into cash flow forecasting, and that's what will then drive your valuations overall.
Thanks, Lawrence. I think the other two components were just the impact of the downgrade, I mean, on debt. Now, clearly, the market generally, we deal with all the financial institutions and as an industry, and also very much with the DCM market. And general view, certainly a couple of weeks back, was that, you know, a downgrade was kind of imminent and inevitable, and that the market had priced in that downgrade. Unfortunately, I haven't had opportunity to look what has happened to the bond market yields today, but I do think that you might find there'll be a little bit of volatility in the short term, and then it should settle down. And I think the other thing that you should see is the currency should weaken in the short term while these things kind of find a new level. And what we have seen on the ground is just that the banks are still lending. They're actively lending. They're supporting the sector. They're incredibly supportive. And, you know, in pricing their debt, you know, they are also facing increasing difficulties and, you know, trying to kind of find exactly the right place to price it. So the liquidity is a bit patchy. And I think there we'll have to get the banks to speak for themselves. But I think the reality is that certainly our experiences have been pretty supportive. In terms of e-commerce, just briefly, I don't believe there's actually any regulatory constraints on e-commerce in the current environment. For all essential services, they can continue to trade and deliver goods, etc. I've been the beneficiary of one of the local online shopping offerings that delivered at home just the other day. So they definitely operating, buying food, etc. The reality is, I mean, I think the other question that typically comes on a call like that is the impact of e-commerce on the sector. And to be honest, in the South African context, that impact hasn't been material. Total, as of last year, I think the total online sales was about 1.8%. of total turnover, and the bulk of that 1.8% was in fact in movie tickets and services and tickets for plane tickets, etc. So not real goods per se. So hopefully that answers your question. Then I've got a mail here from Dean Ginsberg at Old Mutual Wealth Private Client Securities. He talks about requests a indication where shareholders and investors need some element of comfort that management of various listed REITs do not take advantage of these low share prices to issue themselves excessive options while prices are low. How can this be achieved at industry level? So, Dean, that's kind of poking the bear a little bit in the open, right? But the reality is that that most of these companies have remuneration committees, and that you know, increasingly remuneration is not only a public issue but also a very emotive one. So I've got the feeling that, you know, in this environment, that remuneration committees will be increasingly careful in the way they approach remuneration, you know, given what is going on, not only in the operational environment, so the fundamentals, but also if you look at the share markets. So, you know, I don't think that, and if you go, most of the share schemes in the sector, Dean, have been purchase schemes, to be honest. Now, they've also come with certain issues, but, you know, the dilution typically in those kind of schemes has been less for investors. I don't think certainly it is an issue that the industry per se is hugely concerned about at this point. But you know, clearly it is a company by company thing. So I can't really talk for each of the companies. It's up to the boards and the shareholders of those companies to obviously make sure, because most of those schemes would be subject to shareholder vote. So if you don't like the answer, vote against the scheme. That's, I think, all the questions. Any other questions? I can take maybe one more question, folks. Okay. If there's no more questions, I'd just like to thank everybody. Is there one more question?
Yes. Yeah. Nanny here. Sorry, Steve.
Please proceed.
In terms of the tenants, have they expressed in terms of the liquidity from their side, like how many months of rentals or salaries they can still cover? If the lockdown gets extended, like 3 months. Yeah, I just want to have a better understanding from the tenant side.
Sure. And I think it's a very difficult question to answer from our point of view. Lawrence, once again, you're welcome to chip in here, but I think the reality is that in depending on the nature of the company, you know, if you look at the South African environment, some companies obviously have global exposure, so each jurisdiction has its own dynamic, I think, from a global perspective. But bringing it back to the South African context, you know, you've obviously got retail, office, and industrial, and hospitality. Now, clearly, the tourism sector has been very hard hit. Even the healthcare sector has been impacted because of the sort of instruction from the Department of Health, you know, limiting certain procedures at hospitals in this time of crisis, where the focus has to be on managing potentially big volumes of sick people that could be coming through the door. And, you know, so these have all had an impact on those sectors. If we talk about the three sectors independently, I think office and industrial is very much a client-by-client sort of scenario, whereas retail clearly as a collective has been impacted in that the shutdown per se has limited the ability of certain traders to actually trade in the shopping center. So when it comes to liquidity, I think if you're a big listed retailer, national retailer, your situation is very, very different, and your access to liquidity or your current liquidity position will probably far exceed the little SMME, which I would say at best month and a half worth of liquidity potentially on some of those. And considering the 5 years of really, really difficult economic trade that we have gone through, you know, this is on top of that. And I think that you'll find that some of these tenants, you know, are in very, very difficult times. So we think that the focus on SMMEs being quite deliberate and quite specific, I think that it's important that, you know, investors understand why we are picking up this specific baton and running pretty hard with it. And, you know, that means that it means we become in the crosshairs with some of the bigger tenants because, you know, collectively we have those responsibilities as a collective, you know. And, and I do think that that it's important for us to have a look at these people, the smaller tenants, more in terms of, you know, the attention and the relief and assistance from an industry perspective. I don't know if that answers the question. Lawrence, I don't know if you want to add anything.
Estienne, thanks. I would just say that, you know, when you look at the concentration of retail in South Africa, it's both a positive and a negative. I think the positive may be that if you look at most retail landlords, you'd find that the percentage of national tenants it's probably saying somewhere around 80%. Obviously, it will vary by property, but I would say at a broad level, you could look 75 to 80% of their tenants being listed nationals. Now, if you consider that most shopping centers here are grocery anchored and they're still trading, you can start doing some work to sort of see, you know, which are the tenants that are still trading, which are the large national ones whose, you know, financials are all public, and you could sort of see their strength. And then it's sort of, you know, that sort of 20 to 25% that's not in the large listed category, which are maybe some fairly large chains but not listed, and then your SME sector. And I think, you know, that's the one, as Etienne has mentioned, that we really need to try and nurse through this and make sure that we can sort of help as much as possible with, you know, with saving businesses, saving jobs, and keeping those tenants alive. But your big tenants really should have the wherewithal to be able to get through this.
Okay. Thanks, Lawrence. Yeah, folks, I think unfortunately we've kind of run out of time. Unfortunately, we've got other commitments that we've committed to that means that we have to cut the call short. I think it was scheduled till 5 o'clock. It's now 5:10. Some of you have sent me questions. And I'll do my best to try and send them to people that know the right answer, or I'll try and answer them through the next couple of days going forward as time presents itself. So I'd like to thank everybody, and for those people, Neil, Lawrence, and Amanda, and in fact all the folks at that are involved in the property industry group working behind the scenes, sorting out some of these issues that are absolutely critical. And I think what we'll do is keep you all posted. If anything material happens or interesting happens, you know, we might kind of use the same facility again to get you guys all on the call, seeing as everybody's sitting at home busy gardening or at the pool while we're trying to grind it out here at the back end. So all peace, remain safe. Please stay home and look after your health and your family's health. And yes, please have a look at that REIT sector. Certainly some interesting opportunities, we believe. And hopefully we'll talk again with a couple of really positive bits and pieces of news as and when it develops. So thank you very much, Irene. Thank you. I think that's all from us for today.
This conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your line.